So I want to speak today about what's the function of family. We're going to talk a little bit kind of theoretical, high level today, and then next week, as Brad said, Brad and Joe will go a little bit more boots on the ground into the nitty-gritty of what the practical looks like, of what the function of kind of overflow and how it operates. But today we'll kind of talk a little bit higher level. All right, let's start here in Genesis 1, verse 26. It says, "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that we may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky. So that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.' So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground.'" We see in this story, this kind of retelling, that God, and I love that we see, "Let us make mankind in our image." We're not talking about a God who is thinking to himself, you know, "Oh, I might just make some people." We're talking about a community, God that is a community, this three-in-one God, a community wanting to make a community in its own image. That God doesn't just make beings, God is intending to create family. Because part of the image of God is that God is community, God is family. There's eternally been a Father and eternally been a Son and eternally been a Spirit, all in living in community. And so part of that image bearing is to bear the image of the God who is community, the God who is family. But then we get that blessing of God, and that is to be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over. And that rule word kind of translates to actively partner with God in taking the world forward. The very beginning, the role of family is to create, to generate, to bear fruit. Sometimes we have this idea of Eden as this ideal place. But I think some of the idea that we see here is that Eden is incomplete. Or at least Eden is more of a project than a product. I think this is an important distinction, because do we see what God has done as a product to be enjoyed or a process to enter into? I think in some ways that's true of our lives as well, and we'll get there in a moment. But for Eden, there's a greater reality that it's destined towards, that God makes mankind in his image not just to enjoy what he's created, but to participate in taking it forward. In Revelation, John picks up on the garden imagery. And he describes the New Jerusalem as a garden-like city. That tells me that there's a destination of that garden, not that it stays just a garden, but that there is a garden-like city to be built up. There's something to be developed, which to me implies, you know, something's happened between Genesis and Revelation, that there's now a whole garden-like city in the midst. So the role of family on the earth is not just to sit and enjoy, but to produce, to move the world forward. In some ways, we know this. Like, this is generally why we create families. It's not me suggesting that you're not a family if you decide not to have children, but by and large, the function of families is to create and raise children. We raise children who raise children. We call that generations, like generating, where we continue to generate children who generate children. We're generating something. And we don't just raise children to get bigger, like, although they're going to do that without intervention probably. But our hope as parents is to raise our kids to mature, functional, independent adults. Like, I don't want to get to the fact, you know, I don't want to get my kids to the age of 18 and think, "You're still a child." Like, I want them to get there and go, "I'm ready to release you out into the world." And this is the role of church community as family too, is to mature spiritual children, is to produce, to generate something, to raise up the people within it. Or you might express that as transforming life through Jesus. Or you might express that as to be a family of wholehearted people, becoming unmistakably like Jesus. So if I were to sum up what I believe the function of family is, it's that the work of creation is ongoing, and the function of family is really to participate in that, both in the generation of children, but not just to create children, but to raise them up, mature them, and bring them into that fullness. I want to read from John 15 and just pick up on a bit of a metaphor that Jesus uses and kind of just reflect on that as it relates to, I guess, how we see that maturity happen in family. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I've spoken to you, or you are already pruned because of the word I've spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. I feel like we've reflected sort of recently on perhaps the abiding side of this and what it means to abide. But I want to focus more on the idea of bearing fruit here. In some ways, the vine becomes a metaphor for family or community, that we as individuals get to abide in and remain in Jesus, but we also collectively get to remain in and abide in who he is. And that the vine becomes a metaphor for all of us working together to bear the fruit of his kingdom. And I want to draw out what I think are two key things for us this morning on bearing fruit. And the first is submission. And that's submission first and foremost to the gardener. There needs to be a trust that God is kind enough to not let us waste energy on growing a fruitless branch. For anyone who's ever tried to grow fruit trees, like, you know that why you prune is just because, you know, it's just growing leaves. It's wasting all of this potential energy into something that isn't fruit, into something that isn't what that tree is designed for. So we cut it away to make sure that we're ensuring fruitfulness. So we submit to the potential pain of pruning because we trust that God's deepest desire is to actually see something fruitful and beautiful in our lives. Eugene Peterson talks about pruning as it decreasing the distance between our heart and our root in God, because there are things that just get in the way of where our heart is and where God needs us to be. We could think of pruning in the sense of, you know, Hebrews 12 that talks about discipline, and, you know, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, it's painful, but we're thankful for it in the end. But I almost think most of the time what needs to be pruned in my life is just trivial things. Like, I think of that when I think of pruning trees. It's just like, this isn't needed. Like, it's just extra. It's just a thing that doesn't need to be there. I think especially in this day and age, there's so many trivial things that I just need pruned out of my life sometimes. I just need the Spirit of God to just go, I'm not sure that's serving you. There's so many distractions. There's so many things that would draw us away from our actual purpose. We expect is maybe discipline, and often what we get is just, you know, that we get to simplify our lives in front of God. And sometimes the pain of pruning is maybe not a pain of like suffering, but a pain of just me having to yield my ways and my ideas and my control. The control one sucks, because I'm just like, I would love to be in control. I'm just that kind of personality where I would love to control every moment of my life. But it's just not going to happen. And the sooner that we actually realize that God's wisdom is that he wants the best possible life for us, that he wants to see the best possible fruit come out of our lives, the sooner we realize that yielding is actually the best possible pain we could go through, giving up that control, that submission, Ben talked a few weeks ago about God as our authority, and this is the way that we kind of live that out. Like, is God actually the Lord of our lives? Because it's going to show up in where our need for control shows up, where where our need to have it our own way, and that's where the rubber hits the road in terms of, you can say that Jesus is the Lord of your life and you can have said yes to him, but it's those moments in that discomfort of, are you actually going to choose what God has for you, or are you going to choose your own ideas? That's the pain. That's the pain of discipline, I think, is it's rarely a, you know, it's rarely a sharp physical pain. It's usually just having to give up our own control. I think the first step in submission really is actually believing that we are more process than product. I think if we have this static view of our lives and ourselves, especially before God, we can risk missing anything that comes as pruning. Like, I think we need to understand that we are in process, that we're transforming. If we just wrongfully assume we are the way that we are, or, you know, that's just part of my personality, we might miss an opportunity to actually deal with something in our lives. Because we're becoming something. We're destined towards something. God's kind enough to not leave you exactly the way you are. And he loves the Son so much that he wants to fill the earth with people just like him. And so you're destined towards being like who he is, to be Christ-like. I kind of cheekily said a few months back, you know, that if you're not interested in transforming, this might not be your church, but it might not even be, you know, your religion at that point. Because I just think, you know, to follow Jesus is not just to understand that Jesus had some good ideas, but it's actually to follow him into where he's going, and to follow him not just in his ideas, but in his practices. It's so core to the way that particularly we think about our approach to life with Jesus, that we are a process. Like, even our body is a process, right? Like, our cells are constantly renewing. Like, apparently your muscles, like, every 6 to 12 months are just, like, a completely different thing, and your skin turns over, like, every 30 days. It's like your body is just, like, constantly in process. It seems to me like even the created order understands that creation is ongoing. But if we don't subscribe to that, why would we position ourselves for pruning? I'm also encouraged that God's approach to me bearing fruit is to remove things. Because the last thing that any of us probably need is more things. It's just like, here's all of the stuff. Here's all the practices. Here's all the things to believe. But pruning is all about, like, removing stuff. So God lovingly prunes us back if we allow him, those habits and thoughts and behaviors that just don't serve us. Anything that doesn't draw us forward in our journey to people of love. Why don't we actually stop and just take a moment and just ask God, is there anything that you're pruning in my life? I think that would be a really pertinent question. And I don't need you to share that with anyone, but let's just take a minute collectively to just get real with God and just ask that question. So submission to the gardener, that idea of pruning. I think there's another submission that's kind of in, maybe not as evident in the metaphor of the vine, but in the idea of family, there's a submission to one another. If we think about a family structure, there are mothers and fathers, and there are, you know, matriarchs, patriarchs, there are the people who've gone before us, and then there's the children. And I don't want to paint the picture as well that anyone who's in leadership is a mother and father, and anyone who's not is a child, and that's not how we think about that. Certainly, we could look around the room and see people who have gone before us, and people who, for whom they are mothers and fathers to us, that they have that role in our lives. And I think it's completely healthy that in this place there are people who are drawing us up in the journey. I think that is absolutely something that we need, is that we need to recognize that there are there is something that we can receive from people in this place as mothers and fathers in the family. If we're humble enough to submit ourselves and recognize that, I think, which can be a big if sometimes. But there's so much gold, there's so much value in this room, just in the lives of people around us. There's so much breakthrough that people have had. There's so much wisdom that people have had just from the things that they've walked through. So I just want to encourage you that one of the real values of family as we come into this place is that there are people who have gone into places before you and can be that mother or father for you and draw you up. Or maybe you're sitting here and you're thinking, you know, I have that, you know, I have that value, I have that wisdom, I have these things that I've walked through. You're able to actually be generous with that wisdom, with that learning, with that life experience. That's the beautiful way that we actually see maturity happen in family, I think. I think there's a, you know, I've been talking to Brad a little bit about this. I think there's ways in which we can kind of pull ourselves up towards that maturity. Like there are disciplines and practices and things that we can put in place in our own lives. And then there are ways in which we are pulled up by other people. And I think we need both. Like we can't just, we can't do it solo. We can't mature ourselves by ourselves. But we also can't just be completely dependent on other people. I think we need to find a good balance there. So submission, both to God as the gardener, the Father as the gardener, and to one another as images of the Father in our lives, images of that place. So, yeah. All right, the second key to bearing fruit using this vine metaphor is the trellis. Is this, if you've ever driven through wine country, which you probably have because we're really close to it, you'll know that you don't just plant a vine in the ground and expect it to take off, is that there is always a trellis. There's always some sort of guide to say, this is how we want the vines to grow. We'd like to grow them in orderly lines generally. And there's a guide to say, this is the direction we're growing in. A vine lives on a trellis, and it's a guide to show the plant how and where to grow. And to me, our trellis is our like way of life, is our rule of life, or our practices, whatever language you want to use there. I think the simple truth is that if we want to experience the life of Jesus, you need to adopt the lifestyle of Jesus. Jesus comes to offer life and life in abundance, or life to the full. But it's not just that we believe the right things about Jesus. Like I often hear even like secular people say, you know, Jesus had some great ideas. And you think, which of them are you talking about? Because Jesus had some really challenging ideas. Jesus had some really provocative ideas. I think you can't just be about the ideas of Jesus. Jesus never said to people, like never was handing out tracts. He was asking people to follow him. As a follower of Jesus, you must follow Jesus. Like it seems a little obvious, but that's the invitation. I think you know, we've had this kind of focus on beliefs, on, and I think it's good. Like right beliefs are really great and needed, but it's not just about what we believe; it's what we do about what we believe. You know, right thinking is what we call orthodoxy, but there's also its cousin, which is equally as important, which is orthopraxy, which means right practice. We can't just be all about the orthodoxy, the Christian orthodoxy, and what the right things to believe are. I think that's important. If we just get stuck there and we're just all about what are the right things and, you know, what are the right doctrines and the things to believe, if we get stuck in that, then we risk never, you know, being so heavenly minded we're no earthly good, like Brad says. Like we've got all the right ideas, but it never actually impacts our world. And if we're destined towards something, it requires not just a right belief, but a practice that is in line with that belief. I think a way of life is a little bit like a diet in that we all have one, but some of us are intentional and disciplined, and for others of us, it's just, you know, we're a bit more laissez-faire. And that's not to shame anyone about either their diet or their way of life, but to remind us that the call of Jesus is to live with intention. Everything that Jesus models shows that he lives with intention. Your life is the byproduct of your lifestyle or the choices that you make, your rituals, your routines, how you spend your time and money, how you organize your day. our goal is the fruit that Jesus offers. We need to adopt the lifestyle, the practices that he offers. Like, Jesus doesn't come just to give us good ideas and move away. He showed us how to live, right? Jesus is both divinity and humanity. Like, in his humanity, he shows us what it means to be human, shows us how to live, while at the same time showing us what the Father's like through that divine aspect. But I think him being human means he comes as the template of what it means to be human. You know, Paul picks up on that and calls him the new Adam, or the, you know, he's also called the firstborn of many sons, that Jesus is the prototype of what life now looks like this side of the cross. I think I've shared this quote before, but I need to tattoo it on the front of my eyelids, I think, sometimes, just to really drive it home. This is from Dallas Willard. He says, "The general human failing is to want what is right and important, but at the same time, not to commit to the kind of life that will produce the action we know to be right and the condition we want to enjoy. This is the feature of human character that explains why the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We intend what is right, but we avoid the life that would make it reality." So the problem is not wanting the fruit on offer, but are we willing to rearrange our lives to get it? Are we willing to be pruned to the narrow focus that is apprenticeship to Jesus? Are we willing to grow along a trellis that we didn't establish? And this is the work of, like, the actual work of apprenticeship to Jesus. And I think it's especially difficult in this day and age. I think the way of Jesus continues to become more and more countercultural. As we get busier, as we get, you know, there's no end of distraction and no end of things that could draw your attention away. And I think it's extremely countercultural to think that someone figured it out 2,000 years ago and that the ideal way of life was figured out, you know, 2,000 years ago, and that's how we should be doing things. But that's the challenge of following Jesus. He says, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." And yoke, in this instance, is it was a first century image of a rabbi's way of life. If you were a rabbi, you had a yoke. So people would have asked Jesus, "What is your yoke? Like, how do you do things?" And Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." So the good news is that Jesus promises an easy yoke. I don't ever want to land in a place where you feel like the suggestion is to do more and try harder. Like, I think that can be the temptation sometimes when we talk about some of this stuff, is that, okay, I need to establish all these practices in my life. I feel like the most powerful thing probably most of us can do is submit to the pruning that we asked about earlier when we ask God, what are you actually wanting to prune out of my life? And maybe for some of you, these are just new ideas that you need to explore more with Jesus. But my advice to you would not be to try and put a whole bunch of things in place and try and solve this one. My advice for this and most things is that, like, consistency is always better than intensity. Because there's no use establishing a great prayer practice where you get up at 5 a.m. and you're, like, really passionate about it, and then it lasts 3 days and you're back to your old, you know, routines of no alarm. And I have no alarm at the moment because we have kids, so it's just, you know, you just, like, sometimes you just roll the dice in the morning. It's like sometimes you get a sleep in, sometimes you do not. But the work of apprenticeship is slow and exacting. It's not an intense, you know, fire from heaven moment where everything will be brilliant and you know everything, all the right things to do. It's like Jesus has a lifetime with you. He intends to use it, intends to make use of that time. And I think the best reminder we can have is that we are following Jesus, which sounds obvious, but sometimes I follow Jesus like my child follows me through the shopping center. Like, you're wandering off and you're getting distracted by things. But remember that we have the greatest teacher within us. Like, we are actually following Jesus, who is not an idea, is not a historical figure. Jesus is actually a living being who is within us, right? We have access to him. We're not just... Yeah, following concepts. We are following the person of Jesus who is within us. I think that's encouraging because we're not distant from our master. We're not distant from the one who's going to lead us into all truth. I want to land in just an invitation to the table, to communion. And I think, yeah, as we're partaking of the elements, I just want us to be reflecting on that that question we had earlier for God of like, what are you pruning in my life? But I just want to invite Donna up, who's going to lead us in communion. But thanks for listening.